Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. So we've gone through all of the bonus episodes from WOMC Fest, and starting this Friday, we're moving full-time into two full episodes a week. That's not bonus episodes, two full episodes. So on Tuesday, you'll get a full episode, like today, with Alex Lazarus. On Friday, you'll get a full episode, like this Friday, with Anderson Monroe from Blue Dreams. So stay tuned, check them out. I hope you enjoy them. Please leave me feedback. But today, I sit down with my friend Alex Lazarus. At the time we recorded this, he was the lead visual designer for Mavenlink, but he's since moved on to Twitch.tv. So if we talk about Mavenlink, he doesn't work there anymore. He obviously, like I said, he's moved on. But we do end up talking about, you know, he grew up in Texas. He's an adrenaline junkie. He likes to mentor other designers and a ton of other stuff. Plus, we talk about his fun little side project called La Merde, which is French for the shit, where he's got, you know, cool pins, t-shirts, hats, other cool stuff. So check that out at lamerde.design. So on to the show.
Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. Head over to creativesouth.com and get your tickets now for the greatest conference this side of the Mississippi. Plus, keep listening to the podcast for more exclusive news on CS17 speakers, events, and workshops coming soon.
If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Alex, thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
It's a couple hours earlier for you since you're on the West Coast.
It was a little early morning this morning, but it's great.
Cool. So let's start off. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. So I lived in Dallas and Houston for most of my life and then moved out to San Francisco.
So pretty much born and raised in Texas.
Texan.
Yeah. So when you were growing up, were you kind of into design and art and stuff like that? Because I know you're an adrenaline junkie, so I know that that was a lot of fun.
So I wasn't ever one of those people that actually was like, oh yeah, I'm really into design. Luckily I played a lot of soccer growing up, and I had a mom on one of my soccer teams. I was a teacher at my high school, and she was teaching this like digital imaging class. And in that class, they also covered a little bit of HTML. So I started learning that in that class and fell in love with that, but never really thought that I was an artist. I took a couple like IBM or IB art classes.
Sure.
But that was kind of all I did on that spectrum. I guess I hung out with like some graffiti kids and some break dancers and some other like kind of more creative types, but not, I don't know. I was kind of, all my cliques were all over the place. I never really had like one group that I associated with.
Right. So. Every time I hear somebody say I hung out with like graffiti kids and break dancers, for some reason I picture Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. Possibly one of the worst yet best movies ever made.
Definitely. Exactly. That was my life. Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of street fights that involve dancing, but no actual fighting.
Totally. Yeah, I would be terrible in a fight.
Yeah, me too. Growing up, aside from fighting with my brother, I got in two fights in my life and got my butt kicked both times.
I don't want to find out if I'm any good.
Well, it wasn't my choice. It was like first one, I was like 12 and got sucker punched by a kid.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. You didn't have a chance.
No, and yeah, we had literally just moved to Florida, and I guess this kid was trying to show he was the big man on campus. Why he needed to pick on me, who was at 8th grade, 4 foot
7, you know, probably weighed 90 pounds. You could pretty much stand next to me and just do it.
Yeah. Let the wind knock you over.
Yeah. So, and then the other one was in college, and it was a bar fight that I was not trying to get in. I was trying to break up. And
yeah, it's just always whenever you try to break up the fights that you get pulled into it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it worked. So thankfully, I was not the instigator in any of those. So you get through high school. You've kind of learned all this digital internet stuff. Where do you end up going to college at?
So I went to school at UT Dallas, and I studied emerging media and communications. Got like a minor in political science and a minor in marketing. Really was just really jazzed on a lot of psychology. Mm-hmm. Our design classes were really, really awful. We had a couple of really good professors that really took a lot of like heart into the students and really helped out for like some of the coaching stuff. But there was really never any good critiques or like understanding or even design stuff. I remember taking like a Photoshop class in like freshman year, and our midterms and our finals were both homework that I had in my high school computer imaging class.
So did you have to redesign the dollar bill like every single freshman art design class?
No, I didn't. That would have been amazing.
Everybody I talked to, and I had to do it. You have to like reimagine the dollar bill in Photoshop, and they're always horrible.
No, we had to do like literally, I think it was like a Lynda course, like download. It was like, take these three assets and overlay them just like this photo. So you took like the PNG that they originally gave you, and then lasso tooled out stuff, and then like dropped it in, and then everybody was taking 3 hours to do it, and I did it in like 30 minutes because I've already done it, you know.
Wow. So they're not even teaching at that point. They're just sending you to somebody else who's giving you an online tutorial.
Yeah. And that was frustrating because I had already, like, I started taking on some freelance clients in high school, so I had already been in the game. Like, I never thought that I was like already, you know,
doing it. Or,
yeah it just kind of fell into it. For the longest time, I thought I was going to be working at a marketing firm or something, and I realized that through a couple of internships where I was doing all the like design and web stuff and doing the marketing campaigns, like I really realized that I enjoyed the creative part of it, and you know, buying billboards or whatever. Like, there's media buyers that can help me out with that. Or
yeah, that's my least favorite part of the job is having to negotiate ad buys and
it's terrible.
All that stuff, and I mean, I'm a department of one, so I have to do all of that stuff plus the design and all.
Yeah.
But finally I've got somebody who I can start offloading stuff like that. But yeah, that's my least favorite part. It's like, I don't care. Horrible at negotiating stuff.
Yeah. I think in small doses it works. Like, it's a good balance, 'cause then it like makes you appreciate the other parts of the job more.
Oh, but yeah.
Like, if it was a full-time job, I would go mad.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I know how to do it. That doesn't mean I want to be doing it.
Exactly.
So, excuse me. So you get out of college. What do you end up doing then?
Oh man, that's a good question.
Or is there a large transition in between there?
So I like I said, I kind of started doing some of the freelance stuff in high school. And then kept freelancing kind of throughout college, worked at a couple ad agencies, a couple nonprofits. So even before I graduated college, I had like a real job. I was the senior digital brand launch officer or something like that at One Fast Buffalo. It was like a really big title for like a fresh out of school kid, but it was a lot of fun. We got to learn like a lot there. Ended up leaving that and just doing freelance full time after that. Felt like ad agencies in Dallas were not the right fit for me. Kind of had a couple of like people inside the ad agency world tell me to like just stop doing design because I'll never be good at it. I was like, oh cool, like
you're a fun guy to work for.
Exactly. I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to do my own thing, and got way too many clients. That was a lot of fun. So I did that for, I guess, 3 years after school. And then I'm out here now. So,
gotcha. So, you know, let's kind of take a detour real quick, because I'm really curious about how you got into, you know, I don't even know what you call it, the downhill longboarding stuff. And, you know, like, growing up in Texas, I get like your love for like motorbikes and things like that. You know, there's a lot of cool dirt tracks around that area, but the, you know, the longboarding down the PCH is something different.
Yeah. So I actually was awful at riding skateboards as a kid. Like I said, yeah, I played a lot of soccer. So my whole goal was to play college soccer. So I played college soccer at ETD, which is a Division III school. So no real like scholarships or anything. I had a bunch of like D1 and D2 schools all up north that wanted me, but they were just, it gets really cold. and I played.
You do realize you live in San Francisco, which never, I mean, it's a different type of cold. So.
We say this as I'm wearing a hoodie.
Yeah. In July.
It's great. I played a soccer tournament in Dallas one weekend and it was sleeting and it was miserable and I was a goalkeeper. So I was freezing and I was just like, all right, well, I guess Dallas will be the as far north as I go to play soccer. So did that. And I had two roommates that were both on the soccer team with me and they both had longboards.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, like these guys are using it to get around campus really quick. They're like, yeah, get on it, Alex. And I was like, all right. So I borrowed their boards a couple of times and I was like, whoa, this is cool. Like, why is this feeling so cool? Like it was the wheels and everything are just so much bigger than a normal skateboard. So like it was a lot smoother, a lot faster. I ended up kind of getting my first board. I remember like talking to my parents about my first board and they're like, oh yeah. Like, so you're going to get this board, like, don't do anything crazy. So I sent them these like cruising videos and they still hold this over my head. It's great. And there's like these like really just calm surfy type of videos. And I was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to be doing. Cause I really thought that that's what I was going to be doing. But eventually it became,
hey, that's what I want a board for, is to just, do that. Cause
yeah, I mean, that's super fun too.
Yeah. I got like a half a mile walk from the free parking at work.
Oh,
to my office, so, which I, don't get me wrong, I need the exercise and all that, but it'd be a heck of a lot more fun if I could just, you know, do it on a skateboard.
You should do it.
I'm looking into it now.
That's awesome. So eventually it became like, hey, after class, we're going to go down this like little tiny hill outside of the university and we're going to start racing each other. And we started putting like money down. It was like $5 each time. Like whoever's going to get to the bottom gets the $5. And the just kept turning hands. And that year, it coincidentally, we had the worst season that UTD soccer team has ever had before.
Sure.
Typically, we're like top one or two, and I think we were 9th out of 14th. So I was like, all right, well, I think I'm done with soccer. And I started finding out that there was like local races that you could compete in with longboarding, and it's all downhill from there.
Pun intended.
Puns.
So what was it about? I mean, obviously there's that adrenaline rush that comes with it, but what was it that really just kept piquing your interest and, I don't know, for lack of a better term, didn't get you to a level where you were just like scared shitless?
Yeah. I think it's just like constantly pushing your boundaries of comfort. I've crashed so many times on both a skateboard and a motorcycle. So like I'm not afraid of failing, really. I'm just afraid of being really bad at stuff.
Gotcha.
So I was like constantly the competitor in me is like, hey, I've got to get better at this. I've got to be the best on campus. I've got to be the best in Texas. I've got to be the best in the US. I've got to be the whatever. Like it was just kind of always that drive to like perfect my craft and become better. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you got to like the top 100 nationally for doing that?
Yeah, I was ranked by the International Gravity Sports Association as like, I guess, 98th or something.
Hey, you broke the top 100.
Yeah.
Take it.
So yeah, and then I found out that I'm like, I looked on the records or whatever, and apparently I'm like 300 in the world, or was 300 in the world. So
see,
that was a thing. Yeah, I do, like, it's weird tooting my own horn for that stuff because there's so many better skaters than me out there. But yeah, I was ranked pretty well.
Cool. So, you know, you're doing that, and now, you know, I know lately you've also been kind of getting back into, or not necessarily getting back, but doing a lot more just amateur racing stuff, with, you know, the motorbikes and all. Are you more of a dirt bike fan or are you a street bike style fan?
So I'm definitely more a street. I never got the dirt bike as a kid. It's just a really expensive sport. Also, we like my family's not really a big proponent of motorcycles. So.
Well, mine isn't either, but for a very specific reason, which I will go into in a minute.
Yeah, so I think the first time I really rode a dirt bike was at the Texas Tornado Boot Camp, which is like a racing boot camp for motorcycle street racers and flat track racers. Essentially, that was a flat track course, so they put a knobby or a bumpy tire in the front and then a street tire on the back. So you're going around
so
the
your
corners.
Front grips while your back can drift you around.
It just slips and slides like Tokyo Drift, yep. So yeah. that was awesome and super challenging, and you have to like relearn how to ride a motorcycle because it's completely different.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so. The angles and everything are weird, so lots of fun times.
So yeah, so my family is not a huge fan of motorcycles because when my brother was 11 or 12, we lived in Kentucky, and he got on a buddy's bike, and his buddy didn't bother to tell him that the foot brake didn't work at all. So he's going way too fast, as any 12-year-old will do if they've got something motorized under them. Yep. And he comes to a curve, and he knows he can't make it, so he's like, well, I can either lay it down, and I'm going to get really bad road rash, or I can just go off into the woods, which weren't like real thick woods. He was like, and it'll just kind of slow me down. So he goes through the woods. The problem is he doesn't get far enough in to slow him down.
Oh, no.
When his foot gets caught between a tree stump and the bike, and it crushes his foot. And I mean, it's like the doctor said it was the worst break he'd ever seen without like compound fractures poking through everything. And they had to completely rebuild his foot. And it was so gross because it didn't heal. Like, the skin part didn't heal right where they sutured it up. It was like, had to go for months with, and they always get this horrible, disgusting scar.
Oh, compound fractures are so disgusting.
I know, yeah. My nephew, is probably the only person to ever get a compound fracture getting off of a trampoline. But it was gross. Because, yeah, it broke through his wrist and right through.
Fantastic.
He was like 9 or 10 at the time. And he had just broken his wrist 8 months before in karate. He was doing a kick. He was doing a kick and he lost his balance and he just fell weird and it just kind of popped. And then, you know, I guess it – I know they say it takes 6 to 8 weeks to heal, but – takes a lot longer than that to heal completely. So yeah. I'm sure it was still weakened and getting off the trampoline slipped and landed on that same wrist and it just went right through.
Yeah. So. I find it weird that like I can visually see like compound fractures or whatever on somebody and be like, all right, that's like, we can diagnose this and fix it or whatever. But then just imagining that pain, like I have a very vivid imagination of all that pain.
Yeah, like seeing comes it from being artistic, so you can imagine everything.
Yeah, like just seeing it's fine. Like I can cope with that, but like I can. If you tell me about it, I am there with a broken wrist right now.
Yeah. Oh, I'm the same way. Yeah. If I see it, but I think that comes back to like with your adrenaline thing, is that adrenaline kicks in, so you're like, okay, that person will be okay. They can do this. I can help them with this. And it just takes over and pushes out that, oh God, I'm going to barf.
Exactly.
So, you know, you do all this racing and all this stuff in your spare time, but you've also got some other side projects. And we'll get into your regular day job here in a minute too. And you know, right before we hopped on, you said you're launching one pretty much this week. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, totally. So today is the first day that the site is actually live. So it's called Le Merde, and essentially it's French for the shit or shit. So essentially the whole purpose behind this is just me making design stuff that's all trendy. Think about like thick lines or just line art or whatever it is that's the latest trend. I guess gradients are back now.
So like, I'm still fighting against that one. I can't get behind it.
I'm just going to do like a full gradient shirt, I think, and call it a day on that one. Yeah. So essentially this came from seeing design trends and having clients, and I'm like, oh, those are so pretty, or those are fun. I want to learn how to do that or do this and that. And just never being able to do that for a client because it's just so fleeting. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like my outlet and venting point that I can do that stuff and sure. create like pretty things and not really have. So I guess ironically, like my whole stance on it is like giving shitty designs purpose mm-hmm. because design without purpose is just shitty design. So
yeah, well, if you're good at bullshitting, though, you can make up a purpose for something.
Exactly. Yeah.
I do it all the time at work. I hope they don't listen to this.
Yeah.
So, but okay. So, you know, were you influenced by other people? You know, not, and I don't mean influenced by like their design and stuff like that. I mean, influenced by other people out there to create a project like this.
Yeah, like, so I've always been a really big fan of like Obey. As you can see, I've got like three mm-hmm. Obey prints behind me, and like there's like certain aesthetics that I've, like, even Clark Orr, oh my god, like all of his stuff is so amazing, but like I don't think I could ever take the appropriate time to try to like learn that kind of graphical style for a client. So it's like I want to learn it for my own stuff, and might as well have a place to vent on it and put it on a shirt or whatever or a poster. And then Ugg Monk always makes really pretty stuff, and I was like, well, like I could do that. So why spend the $45 for his T-shirt whenever I can just make a shirt myself? Which he makes incredibly quality stuff.
I'm sure Jeff will be thrilled to hear you say something like that.
He's like, really? This is the shit. This is what I've inspired.
He's got a good sense of humor. Yeah. So
he's a rad dude. So yeah, it's like all that good stuff of just like seeing styles and wanting to do it. A lot of it's come from I've love this bar in San Francisco called Zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. All of my designer
friends. I love
friends
the name.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like an old biker bar, but it's really just like overrun by techies. Like I guess everybody
isn't that just San Francisco?
Yeah, but it's like the last kind of it's got such a weird culture. It's so cool. Some days there's like 80 music, some days it's black metal, some days mm-hmm. it's like hip-hop. But like for a while it had like really cheap food, really great beer selection. But they've got like lots of people wear their like denim punk jackets, so I like I've been designing some like patches and some like enamel pins, you know, to like equip the homies with.
So that's awesome though.
Yeah. It's just like fun, like outlets, you know, like kind of get that balance that, you know, being at a corporate day job or whatever, you don't really get to like explore different styles all the time.
Yeah. I mean, and that can be tough because, you know, like you said, you do have a corporate day job and it's, you know, you're not necessarily getting to, this is going to sound horrible. You're not necessarily getting to think to do the things that you want to do. And I don't mean that in like you get projects and you don't want to do them. I just mean it's not like it's somebody else's idea that you're doing. It's not your own idea. So, you know, while it's fun to design those things, it's not necessarily your style or things like that. You're trying to keep in that structure.
Yeah, luckily, I guess corporate day job is a bad explanation of what I do in San Francisco since I think it's like a startup, right? But yeah, I guess my corporate day job is a lot more lax than everybody else's. But what I meant by corporate is like, you know, business software.
Yeah, yeah. So well, since we talked about it, let's go into your, and nobody can see me, so I'm going to do the air quotes. let's go into your corporate, yet not corporate day job. So help me pronounce it. It's Mavenlink?
Mavenlink. Yep.
Mavenlink. Okay. Why do I keep always missing the N on it? I guess it just runs together.
I've gotten so many different pronunciations like Mavenlink or I don't know. It's always interesting getting in an Uber. you never know.
You want me to go where?
Exactly.
Here's the address. Just go there.
Yeah. The great times are whenever I go down to our SoCal Irvine office, mm-hmm. getting in an Uber and accidentally putting the San Francisco office address in. They're like, oh, that's a long trip. It's like, oh, sorry, let me reroute it to the like local airport.
That's gonna be $6,000.
Yeah. It's okay, I'll expense it. It's good.
Yeah. I can buy a used car and get there easier. So what do you do at your job? I know you're a designer, but it sounds like you do a lot of research and strategy stuff too. All of the stuff you were kind of joking about earlier.
Yeah, totally. So I'm the lead visual designer at Mavenlink. So I oversee like all our marketing design. So we've got about like four designers kind of on and off, that maybe five, depending on kind of what their workload is.
Sure.
That I like get to help manage and lead and critique. And so, like you said on, I guess, Bethany Heck's episode, it's like the more, the better you are at your job, the less you get to do it.
Very much so.
So like that, having these side projects lets me to do a lot more design, whereas like I spend a lot more of my time in kickoff meetings and critiques and like all that stuff now. But essentially, mm-hmm. I just make sure everything is on brand, ready to go, and then like help with like the bigger creative projects.
Sure.
So like, everything from interior design to like print collateral, web, everything.
Okay. So what does Mavenlink itself do? Because you mentioned interior design, and I didn't know that about them, so
no,
I'm curious.
This is like internal culture.
Oh,
stuff,
okay.
Rather than like
okay.
Yeah, so we're essentially business software. We have a project management, task management, business insight software. We do a mm-hmm. lot of things. Essentially, we integrate a bunch of different platforms. So if you think of like Harvest and then mm-hmm. Basecamp or AtTask or Asana, like we do all these things in one platform. So you don't have to use all that stuff. It's like really good for big agencies, consultancies, anybody that really wants. I wouldn't say it's the best for like individual freelancers, but if you've got a team of like 5-10 people, you can start taking advantage of some of those features.
Sure. Yeah. You can roll it all into one and not have to go to five different platforms to jump around and consolidate everything into one big Excel spreadsheet.
Exactly. And that was actually one of the like reasons why I was so interested in Mavenlink when I first joined, or even found out about them. Was I was working when I was freelancing, I had a bunch of different companies that I was art directing for and big agencies, and all of them had completely different processes. And it was just super frustrating getting like feedback from like an art, like a creative director or whatever, a group creative director, with like notes on a PDF, and then the other one would just be notes in an email, and then one would be notes in an Evernote doc. And it's like, oh my God, can we all consolidate our feedback into one platform? Like
one place, just one place. Yeah. I'm currently going through that process at work, and they're like, it's everything is being decided by committee at the moment. And it's like, how about until we figure it out, we just all agree to use this one. And somehow that worked.
Did that really work?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so simple.
Yeah. It was like, I honestly did not plan it to be that part of the solution, but it was like, why don't we just consolidate in here? There's the database that's built into SharePoint. Let's use that to consolidate all of our tasks, you know, and schedule stuff out. And that worked. And that seems to have stuck.
That's awesome.
For now.
Until somebody breaks the process.
Well, until we upgrade our SharePoint again next month. So that'll be interesting. So you mentioned you're a visual designer. So I, you know.
Oh, God.
I am so confused by this because. And it may just be I am not in that community. Like, I have to research all these new titles that pop up, and I feel so old, and I don't think I'm that old, but it's like senior UI, UX designer, UX strategist, UX researcher, visual designer. And I'm like, can we just do designer and then in the skill set list out what they do?
Yes. So my biggest pet peeve is the visual designer title, not just at like Mavenlink, but within the design community. So I'll do like
isn't that, I mean, unless you're like drafting design or engineering software stuff, aren't we all visual designers?
Exactly. Like even if your wireframing is, it has some sort of visual component to it.
Yeah.
So I think it's like that graphic designer title, right? It's like, okay, like what does that really entail anymore? Like nobody's really doing that much print anymore, and so why can't we just do, you know, designer? Like that seems like a great title for it. As visual designer, I think cheapens what I do, right? Like it makes it seem like all I do is make pretty things and I don't put any thought into it.
I know.
It's like, yeah, I just jam out to some Nelly and some Nicki Minaj, and all I do is just, you know, make pretty things all day. Yeah, it's like, so yeah, like even when I'm mentoring in SF, like I do a lot of like UX mentor nights, and they're like, oh, a visual designer, and they're like, so like what do you do? Or like I get like these like really condescending like questions about like so you just make stuff pretty, and it's like, all right, cool. Which is fine, because they're like, some of them are younger, some of them are fresh to the industry, and it's like, all right, well.
Or some of them are like me and older and don't understand why we have 17 titles for the same job.
Yeah, well, it gets great whenever you start having like huge companies that have like senior designer one or level one, and then senior designer like level two. And then it's like, okay, so there's three tiers in this field, and then
associate designer, senior associate designer, junior associate designer,
junior associate and, production designer. It's like, all right, cool.
Yeah, can you just call them a production designer or just a designer? Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree. That's frustrating. And especially because, like, in the Bay Area, we have a lot of, you know, lead or head designers that are really just the head of themselves. it's like...
I can't say anything about that. Yeah. I have been in that role many a time.
Yeah. I don't know. So, like, it's interesting whenever, like, people are like, oh, so do you actually lead anybody? It's like, yeah. Luckily, I do.
Yeah.
I could be at a smaller company where I guess I don't, but.
Yeah, that was interesting to see. So you're the creative director. So how many people are on your team? Well, it's just me.
Yeah, I mean,
not that I can say a lot, because I've definitely been in that situation. And
yeah.
I was glad for that title because I knew it would eventually get me out of that situation. But.
Well, the best part about freelancing is you can always have that title.
Yes, I'm as long as I don't go with the trend that had been going on for the past few years where everybody's like referring to themselves as renegade ninja.
Oh god,
you know, all that stuff. I told somebody the other day I was going to call my what was it I was going to call myself a full stack ninja renegade. So it was like five different words together.
I was introduced
just all
to
those descriptors
a company as the design ninja before.
I get design. I get introduced as the design or social media guru all the time, and I'm like,
oh, that's like a great Twitter bio.
Yeah. I think I'm going to change it just to make it sound as ridiculous as possible to see if it catches on. So the literal version of what your job description is entails what?
It entails me making a lot of really pretty things without any thought process behind it. No, no, I just make sure that all the feedback for campaigns and everything gets, you know, just like, it's like,
so you're overseeing the brand.
So
make
I've got
sure
a creative director above me, and then okay. I'm kind of like, but he oversees the product and the marketing team. So
okay.
We kind of have so you, split. So yeah. I'm kind of like the top guy on the marketing side, and then he's okay. Like the overall group creative director, I guess, if you want to look at it.
So you make sure everything stays on point, and if it varies, it varies for a reason.
Correct. I'll lead like concepting sessions and like big projects, whereas like some of like the smaller medium stuff kind of like can go with like the other designers can like lead their own, and then we come back and lead feedback sessions and
yeah
stuff. I'm trying to like really push our design culture right now at work, which has been a little bit fun.
The way you said that.
Yeah. Well, it's like hard to get everybody in the room at the same time, but it's like it's really
hurting cats.
Yeah, it definitely is. I've been trying to get everybody to go to creative mornings talks and stuff, and mm-hmm. I've gotten like one or two people to go with me.
Hey, baby steps. It starts somewhere.
Step. No, what I'm really excited about was we're starting to do design challenges. So we'll spend like an hour and a half every like 2 to 3 weeks, and we'll do like a sprint. So essentially, this last one was a type fight like thing.
Oh, nice.
I'm really wanting to compete in type fight next year at Creative South. So
it's fun.
It's so hard.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's like, nerve-wracking.
Like, even just competing against, like, I think we had four or five people competing at this last one at work. And it's great because we can get developers in on it that, like, are artsy, but they don't want to actually admit that they are. But, you know, they finally like, all right, fine, I'll spend an hour and a half and I'll do some stuff. And it was so much fun. But I'm really bad in an hour trying to, like, concept around a letter. So I've got to
That's where it's, that was the tough part for me is, so when I did type Fight at Kratos out this year, and it was the first time I'd done it. I went into it and I had all of these styles picked out and all of these patterns picked out. And I was like, I'd practiced a little bit. I was like, I can do this and I can apply it to everything. And then I get in there and I'm like, I just shit the bed.
And you were against Rolf Nelson, right?
Yeah. And he just like, he deservedly kicked my ass in it.
Yeah. He's talented.
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those where I was like, oh, I forget how much little time I actually get to design anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've got the concept, and I had the concept from the start, and the execution part is like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Oh, crap, how do I do that texture thing that I learned again? It's been so long.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I got a lot of that when I did it. So in your role, you did say you have a team and you're leading them. And then I know, kind of on the side, you like to take and mentor other people as well. What spurred that on? Was it just from doing that role or?
Yeah. So I think, for me, I have had like a couple of really key mentors in my career. One of them being Sebron Snyder, who's a photographer in Dallas, and he's super incredibly talented. I met him at an AIGA event, and we just kind of clicked, and he helped me out in a college project and have like been best buds ever since. And he's like kind of always been there to help balance me out in my career. And then it is drastically contrasted by having like key people that like just shit on you and just make you feel like an absolutely untalented and like never going to be talented designer. And so like I had a formal education in design. Like I took some design classes in college, and that program was like not beneficial, I don't think, for that. But like the psychology classes were great for it. So like I learned a lot about psychology and how to like contact people and talk to them and like bring people together and get the core essence of what they're trying to solve. And I feel like a lot of designers don't really get that, even if they're at a art school or whatever. So it's always been about trying to like bring people up, because I wouldn't be where I am without having those guidance or mentors in my life. So it's like really big for me to like give that back to the community.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing that for?
Mentoring, I guess I kind of started in Dallas a little bit, but really like kicked it off, I guess a year and a half, like really trying to like, I guess since definitely a little bit before I moved to San Francisco, but definitely since I've been here, I've been proactively seeking out like mentoring meetups and like speaking gigs so I can like influence more people and like talk with people. And I have like no problem giving out my email to like people looking to get mentored or whatever. Sometimes I'm a little bit slow, but I try to give back feedback, or I'll go grab coffee. Like I set it to have like two like one-on-ones like a week. So I'll grab coffee like Tuesday, Thursday before going into work with people and like listen to them and try to like brainstorm around their career. And sometimes you just find these incredibly talented designers, and like nobody's like really helped them. And it's like, how are you so good? And like, why don't you have a job yet? And it's like, I'm trying to like use all my networking and everything that I've built up and try to get them those roles.
Yeah. We have an ad agency here in town in Mobile that, and I'm not going to name them cause I have to live here, but they have some incredibly talented younger designers working for them. But they're a turn and burn agency. They hire young and they work them to death. And then there's literally like an age cap on it. By the time you hit like 27, they want you out the door so they can bring in somebody new, fresh from college, pay them dirt cheap, turn and burn them, and knock them out the door. And they get to do some really good work, but it's, you can tell that they're not necessarily being pushed in the direction, and they're not, you know, they're not being told, they're not being reinforced in the areas that they should be reinforced, and not being given critical feedback in the areas where they, you know, are on the verge and they could really improve things.
Totally.
So, you know, we started AIGA down here. Well, it's been 2 years now. And that's been a really fun thing to do, is when we have those student meetups, is sit down with somebody one-on-one for an hour or two and just say, you know,
for lack of a better term, politely tear their portfolio to shreds to, you know, point out, you know, this is awesome. Keep pushing that style. You've got something there. Work on that. That maybe isn't your strength. So I'm not saying abandon it, but don't make that the focus of what you want to put in there. Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's I think that's always been my issue with ad agencies, is that it was always felt like it's a turn and burn society. I think I think as time goes on, I think that that fundamental structure will change and adapt to the market. But like, why do that whenever you can work at a, you know, a full-time job and you're not going to have this like always like thought process of, oh, well, if the account messes up this account relationship, then like that account's gone and I'm probably gone as well. Like there's no security. Like I remember like working hours on a campaign with an incredibly talented production head of producer for like a video spot we were doing. And like, I think we worked like something like almost 90 hours like on this project in 108 degree weather on a baseball field, and she was fired the next Tuesday because like they ran out of budget, while like the group creative director whatever got like a salary raise. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on here? Like, how is she getting fired? And like, because we ran out of budget and you like pay people more at the same time. That's like super messed up.
Yeah, that's really frustrating.
So yeah.
Yeah. So moving to that, you said, you know, you've been doing a lot of speaking and stuff lately. What's your goal with that? And what do you generally like to talk about? Do you have like set topics that you talk about, or do you kind of mix it up depending on where you're going?
Yeah. So it depends on kind of the environment. I've been doing like a lot of hackathon stuff. So a lot of it's been around like human-centered design and design thinking, stuff that can like apply to developers and designers and not just developers or just designers. So a lot of that stuff has been kind of around that. I definitely am trying to put together a talk right now on kind of uplifting junior designers and how to give feedback. Cause it seems interesting whenever, cause we were at Montus and they had the junior designer panel,
who all were remarkably more talented and farther along in their career than me. Well, not farther along in their career, but remarkably more talented than me.
Yeah.
Felt very insecure after them talking.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like, they're all incredibly talented. It was just, like, an interesting, like, it wasn't really a panel. It was, like, a more of, like, high-fiving them for being talented rather than, like, like, so how did y'all get to this role and, like, how can we help bring more people like that? It was, like, look at how awesome we are. We're 20 years old and we've got creative director titles. So it's, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out, like, it seems like, I think we briefly talked about it before, but it seems like we've got a lot of mid-level designers that are just like all tooting their own horns, for lack of better words. And they're just like, oh, you're talented. We're talented, but they're all not really that talented. And it seems like the super high level talented people are really modest. Like, I mean, you had Draplin on here, and Draplin's kind of got like a big boisterous personality, but he's also super like chill and humble about like how he operates. And like,
he's the one who also very much jokes that we are not changing the world here. This is, you know,
I think
playing with colors.
Exactly. We take design so seriously sometimes, and it's like, yeah, but we're not really out there in the field sweating. Like we're not doing manual labor. Like at the end of the day, like we're pushing pixels around on a screen. And which is like interesting, cause like the racing stuff, like really just reminds me like, hey, like no matter how crazy your deadlines get or whatever, it's like you didn't die this weekend. So that's cool.
That's a good way to look at it.
Like, yeah, it's like really stress free, keeps everything in like perspective. Like, all right, like, yeah, sure, I'll work extra hard to get this deadline out or whatever, but like at the end of the day, it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, cool. So, excuse me as I choke on my own coffee. So aside from the uplifting designers, and you know, which I think we definitely need to do, of, you know, not necessarily putting them on a pedestal if they're young and talented, but bringing to forefront the ones that have potential and don't know it, and talking about why.
Correct.
They could do things.
I think it's like, oh man, it's a conversation about how to give good feedback and not tear somebody's soul out, but more of like,
yeah,
how to like encourage. And like, I mean, I've talked with a lot of designers that like just haven't developed their eye yet,
mm-hmm.
but you can tell that they've got thought processes behind what they're doing. And that's something like, it's so hard to teach somebody how to think, but I can teach you how to use the pen tool better. Like whatever it is, like I can teach you the aesthetic stuff. Like you can learn that. It just takes like spending time to learn the critical details of the job, but I can't teach you how to think or build a strategy or present design or communicate efficiently. Right. Like that's stuff that you've been developing your whole life.
Which
some people could probably argue.
I mean, it can be learned, but it's not a, you know, sit down in an afternoon and learn it.
Yeah.
It's cumulative effect over years and years of doing it. And, you know, so, I mean, I got my start in just plain old production design at a printing company.
Yeah.
But through just a series of jobs, you know, got more involved in like marketing strategy and things like that, and found out that I really enjoyed that. So I did learn how to do it, but it wasn't like it just happened overnight. And I, you know, school can only teach you so much about that.
Totally.
So you've got to be able to play that chess game in your head of, well, if I do this, it's going to do this, and it's going to do this, and how do I incorporate this back into there? And then while simultaneously playing that chess game of, now I've got to explain this to them, and if I tell them this, they're not going to want to do this, which needs to be done. And it's connecting all those dots while playing five different chess games in your head.
Yeah.
And that's tough. I don't know that there's a good way to teach that. You can definitely learn it, but I don't think it can be taught.
Definitely.
Does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
That's like an osmosis process that just comes over time.
Exactly. It's just by spending the hours in shop and doing it all and learning from other people around you. I think I always find it hard, especially in the Bay Area, is like, because you'll have these junior designers that are the only designer in the whole office. And it's like, they're like, how do I get better? It's like, you really need to surround yourself with people, or, you know, reach out to the designers, you know, and talk to them and try to figure out what's making you happy. How are you progressing in your design ability, and get critiques and feedbacks and bounce ideas off people. Cause if you don't have that, you get really static.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to do. I mean, you know, in a large market, you can be overwhelmed because there's so many people that you don't know where to go. And then if you're in a small market, there's just not enough people to bounce that stuff off. And then you also get assholes who just don't want to help people.
That's true.
And unfortunately, there seems to be a lot more of those these days than there used to be.
I think they're just louder.
I would agree. I think that's what it is. It's that whole Kardashian era has given rise to the overprivileged, really loud douchebag that gets noticed more. And then for some reason, people start applauding that because they're loud.
Exactly. Like
being loud doesn't make you good or make you a good person.
That is true. There you go.
It just makes you loud.
That's my next talk right there. Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome. I'm happy to give you that.
I'm just going to start it off by screaming at everybody.
Yeah. I think that's an important note for politicians this year, too, on both sides of the fence. I don't care which way you lean politically.
it's great, because the political science in me is like, cringing and also crying, and I don't know, it's a whole another discussion.
We'll talk about that after the elections. That way less people will try to, you know, burn us at the stake.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So, you know, you've got all this stuff in the works, you're launching Lemaird, you're planning new talks, mentoring people and all that. And then, you know, taking time for yourself to throw yourself down a hill 70 miles an hour on a wooden stick.
Yeah.
What else are you doing?
Oh, man. I feel like that's a good synopsis of all I do now. I guess Friday morning I found out that I'll be doing the Red Bull Donners downhill race. So
nice.
Coming out of retirement from skating, after a couple of years off. So this is going to be interesting.
So you're going to start practicing again?
I've got to start practicing and get in shape. Lanyots sent me a bunch of gear and stuff, so I'm super thankful from them. They like sent me a great new free ride board, so I spent all week pushing around it. I could barely walk to work the other day. It was great. I was so sore. It was so much fun. Just super therapeutic, you know, just get mm-hmm. that mental break. Some people do it through traveling or, I don't know, binge watching Netflix. And I find that I need to either like find the creativity in skating or throwing myself down a race course or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to find something to do where I can turn my head off for a while.
Come skate with me, man.
I will. I need to get a board. When we get off air, I will ask you for recommendations.
Totally. I've got you.
Cool. So where can people find you online?
Oh, man. I'm so fragmented across the internet space. My little cousin's name is Alex Lazarus as well. So
is it really?
So we keep fighting for domain names. So I'm on Twitter at Alex_Lazarus, which is LAZARIS. Dribble is Alex_Lazarus. Instagram is Lazarus. Behance is Alex Lazarus. LinkedIn is Alexander Lazarus. It's so cluster, but it's great.
You're a designer. Nobody's using LinkedIn for that anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fine.
Yeah, if you guys want to look at my portfolio on LinkedIn, we have
like two pieces up on that
yeah,
one.
Exactly. There's nothing there.
I think I do too. And one of them's like a picture of a watermelon I just doodled.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So like, oh, that's not going to get me any work. I really should probably change that one out.
That's awesome. Yeah, and Lamerde is Lamerde, LAMERDE.design.
And for the people who can't see that, he literally just had to look to figure out how to spell his own website. Yeah.
It's French, man.
Hey, I barely speak English.
Yeah, exactly. It's so hard already. That's a struggle.
Yeah. So awesome. Well, thank you for getting up early this morning and taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So we end every podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks. And I know you've been around and heard it said. So would you mind taking us out?
Definitely. Go to Creative South next year and go out and hug some necks.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. I'm going to hit stop on this one. You can find out more about Alex on Dribble and Twitter at Alex_Lazarus. And be sure to check out the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter at CreativeSOPod and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribble, Twitter, and Instagram. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.